I'm Michelle.
And I'm Lucy. And welcome to our April Fools episode.
April Fools. Now, that's sort of Halloween-y rather than April Fools. I don't know. Yes. I feel like there needs to be like a harlequin dancing around with bells and stuff, making a lot of racket for April Fool's
Yeah.
Day.
Yeah, or April Fool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we can't do what we did last year because we've done that. Yep. Can't get away with that twice. So we thought we would read a couple of stories because your average Tudor loved stories about people who were fools or people who made other people look like fools.
Yes.
Or people who were made to look like fools themselves.
Very Schadenfreude.
Yep. They definitely had the ability to laugh at the misfortunes of others, didn't they? The Tudors.
Yeah.
So we found a couple about fools. And I'm going to read one to Michelle, and she's going to read one to me. And I'm going to start with one called The Village of Fools, on account of the fact it's got fools in its name. So, you know, it was easy to find. And this story was set at the time of Bad King John. Probably because it wasn't wise to complain too much about life in the present, but you could get away with it if you implied it happened 100, 200 years ago.
Yes.
And it comes from a book called The Hundred Merry Tales, published in 1526.
Ooh.
But probably the story is much older. Someone came and collected lots of stories that had been doing the rounds.
Yes.
And I spotted a couple that I've heard on Grim Reading that the Grimms picked up later on.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so if anyone listens to Grim Reading and they know the story of Clever Gretel, the one where she is a sassy cook and she happily gets drunk in front of the fire and eats all the chickens. That is in this book as well, The Hundred Merry Tales.
Nice. So do you have that book now?
No, I've only got snippets from it.
Okay.
Yeah, it might be worth getting.
Mm-hmm.
I did look. I seem to remember it being a little expensive for just once a year.
Oh, it's always that way. Like, it's not in print, so it'll cost you $300 Canadian to get this. All right, click, buy. Jason's like, what are you doing? Shh. That may have happened more than once.
Yes. Yeah. Books, they add up. They add up quite quickly. Okay, quick slurp of tea. Are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
Then I'll begin. That was it was called Listen with Mother, a radio program from the 60s, I think it was, the story would always start. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin.
I love the BBC radio programs. You can still find a bunch of them, like the Miss Marple ones.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, love
them. I can't hear that that lovely clarinet music without a nice warm glow.
Yeah. Oh, and I managed to find the old Sherlock Holmes ones.
Oh, with Carlton Hobbs?
No. Bruce.
Ah, yes. Carlton Hobbs played Holmes and Nigel Bruce played Watson, I think.
Yeah, and it's old, 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 and they keep talking about, I think it's called Perry Wine. I can't remember the name of it, but I went looking for the wine to see if I could find some Petrie Wine. It's a California company. They don't exist anymore, sadly. So it's advertisement all the way through of sit yourself down, grab a wonderful glass of this Petrie Wine, and off they go.
Oh. Yeah. It always makes us laugh that Watson says, Cabby, take us to 221B Baker Street. And you say, what? B, he's going to take you upstairs.
All the way.
Yes, if you don't take us through our front door, we won't pay you.
Which is funny, because B in Canada is the basement suite.
Ah.
It's the exact opposite.
But where's your first floor? Is that...
Depending on the engineer.
Ah.
Because some of them have a main, some of them have one.
American first floors are the ones you... go into the next one up, don't you? It's ground floor and first floor. Whereas English first floors are the one you walk off the street onto.
Which makes sense. Both make sense.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong.
No. And we don't say ground floor. We say main floor.
Hmm.
Main, first, second, third, fourth. And then you've got P1, P2, P3 for parking. But they go in reverse. So P1 is the highest level. P2 is the next level. Yeah. And you really get confused if you're going up or down. So if the parking is on top of the building, P1 is the lowest one, and then P2 is the next one. We reverse it.
I've never come across parking on the top of a building before.
Oh, yeah. Part of that is because we live on floodplain. You can't dig down in a lot of areas, so they put the parking on top of the building.
Okay.
I've never felt comfortable with it. I've just got this image in my head of one day it's just going to collapse and you'll be covered yes. in cars. Yeah.
Yes. Going down the floors. Oh, yeah.
See, if they do the P1 going downwards, I always think it should be -1, -2, -3, because you're now going below the main floor. And we have gotten so off track. Welcome to Strange Things in Canada.
Okay. Anyway, April Fools. So, Bad King John wanted to build a hunting lodge near the village of Gotham, where he could go to hunt deer and boar and partridge to his evil heart's content. But when the people of the village heard this, they were filled with sadness. If Bad King John and his cronies came to hunt there, not only would there be nothing left for the villagers, but they might be punished for hunting game there themselves.
Ooh, yeah.
What were they to do? So the good folk of Gotham got together and made a plan. A cunning plan.
Ooh.
Sometime later, the herald of King John arrived in the village. He looked around him. It was quiet. Too quiet. Where was everybody? Usually when he turned up in a village, everyone rushed out to look at him. It wasn't often that mere villagers would get to see a man so gorgeously attired and on such a magnificent horse. He rode until he came to a pond. A little girl was sitting there with her head in her hands, sobbing as if her heart would break.
Aww.
The herald asked her what was the matter. "Herald," she cried, "oh, herald, the moon has fallen into this pond and drowned." She could barely get the words out for sobbing. "I was walking this way last night and I saw it in the water and I tried to get it out, but I couldn't. And now I've come here to look for it and it isn't here. It's sunk beneath the water." And she wailed as if her heart would break. "Stupid child," thought the herald.
"You're a nasty piece of work, Mr. Man."
He's a real child person.
Yes.
She's obviously a fool. And he rode on. But barely had he set off when he saw an old man running down the street wearing nothing but his shirt. In his hand, he carried a wriggling eel. The old man leapt into the pond and held the eel underwater. "What on earth are you up to?" asked the herald. The old man was shaking with fury. "Herald," he cried. "Oh, herald, this is a very bad fish. This greedy fish has eaten every other fish in the river, and I'm going to punish him for his greed by drowning him in this pond." And he thrust the eel still deeper into the water. "Stupid man," thought the herald. "He's obviously a fool." And he rode on. He'd barely set off when he saw a man even older than the other riding along the road towards him. He was riding on his horse, yet he was carrying a sack of grain on his back that was so heavy that the man was slumped forward over his horse's neck. "Old man," said the herald, "why don't you let your horse carry the heavy sack of grain and save yourself and your aching back?" The old man looked at the herald as if he'd never heard of anything so terrible. "Herald," he cried, "oh, herald, I would never be that cruel. My horse is an old horse. I'm hardly going to burden him with heavy sacks of grain at his age." And he carried on his way, riding his old horse, bent over from the weight of the sack. "Stupid man," thought the herald. "He's obviously a fool." And he rode on. Next, the herald came upon 12 fishermen standing by the river with sad faces. "Men," said the herald, "why do you look so sad?" "Herald," cried one of them, "oh, herald, we are sad because 12 of us came here to fish, and yet now there are only 11 of us. One of us must have drowned." The herald looked at them and was about to say something. But the fisherman went on. "Look," he said, and each of them counted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Just 11. One of us must be dead. And all the fishermen looked even more sad. Well, the herald could see quite clearly that as each of them was counting the others, none of them had counted themselves. And he thought to himself, stupid men, they're obviously fools. And he rode on. He'd hardly gone far when he came across a group of people excitedly chattering and carrying wooden stakes and planks. Where are you going, and why do you look so pleased? Asked the herald. Herald, cried a young woman. Oh, herald, do you see that field there? The herald nodded. And do you see that tree in the middle of that field? The herald nodded. Well, in that tree there is a cuckoo, and it cuckoos so sweetly that none of us want it ever to go. So, she said, we're going to build a fence around the tree so the cuckoo can never leave us. The herald looked at the young woman's happy, beaming face. Stupid woman, he thought to himself. She's obviously a fool.
At least he's not saying this to their faces.
No, he's only thinking it. Yes, how to make friends. You're obviously a fool. And he rode on. And he could still hear the happy chattering of the cuckoo fanciers when he came across three young men standing in the road, rolling cheeses down a hill. What are you doing? Said the herald. One of the young men straightened up. Herald, he said. Oh, herald, we are sending these cheeses off to market. Why are you rolling them down the hill? Don't you need to take them to market yourselves? Oh, no, said the young man, as if he thought the herald was an idiot. These cheeses know what to do. When they get to market, they can sell themselves. They don't need us to go with them. And the men carried on rolling cheeses down the hill. Stupid men, thought the herald. They're obviously fools. The herald had had enough by this time. He turned his horse around and rode out of the village and all the way back to London. He went straight to the king. My liege, he said, do not go to the village of Gotham. They're a village of fools. Well, bad King John didn't like the sound of a village of fools, and so he kept away from Gotham and built his hunting lodge somewhere else. And the foolish villagers got together, laughing and patting each other on the back, and they had a big party where they feasted on deer and boar and partridges.
That sounds very similar to, I don't know if it's a true story. I'm trying to remember where I heard it, of a village that found out that the king was going to progress through their town, but then they'd have to pay the king's highway taxes if he did. So they all pretended to be insane because at that time they thought insanity was catching. So the king didn't go through that area. Was that a true story?
Very similar.
Yeah.
I think there's only a limited number of stories, isn't there? And quite often you hear one and you think, oh, that's strangely similar to another one.
Yeah. I'm just looking it up. No, maybe this is this story. It's just a different thing.
Yeah.
Where did I read that? Was that? It might have been a Horrible Histories one.
It's quite a trope, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you've got several. Usually you have three. Well, there are more than three on this occasion. It's probably a conglomeration of a few stories, similar stories put together. But the one about getting the moon out of the pond is a very famous one, isn't it? There's quite a few pubs called Moonrakers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, people staggering out of the pub, absolutely plastered, and trying to get the moon out of the pond.
Aww.
Yeah.
That little girl must have been quite the actress.
Mm-hmm. Okay, your go.
My go. This is the tale of the mute wife. This is the story of a merchant. He'd become rich through the buying and selling of wool. But he didn't hide his money under his bed. He liked to spend it. He had a fine house. He had a fine garden. He had fine clothes. And he was waited on hand and foot by fine servants. There was only one thing he was lacking, and that was a wife. But that was not a problem for long. He soon married the fair Elizabeth. He loved her dearly. Many said she was the most beautiful woman in town, but the merchant said, no, she's the most beautiful woman in England.
Aww.
Elizabeth had hair as black as night. Her skin was white like snow. Her lips were as red as the reddest rose. And she smelt of new-mown hay. Does that remind you of anyone?
I just think she sounds like a vampire, but...
I was thinking Snow White.
Oh, yes, yes.
Skin was white as snow, lips were as red as the lotus rose. Yeah. Everyone who saw her thought her the loveliest woman they'd ever seen. But there was one problem. She was mute.
Is that a problem to him?
Apparently. The merchant had never heard her voice. He had never heard it, but he knew what it would be like. It would be the fairest, most melodious voice in town. No, the fairest, most melodious voice in England. He knew it. A woman as fair as Elizabeth would have a lovely voice to match. She would have a voice like the most beautiful birdsong or the singing of angels. Even though Elizabeth couldn't speak to him, the merchant loved her with all his heart and showered her with jewels and clothes. It pleased him that everyone looked at his fair wife and admired the sparkling gems and sumptuous clothes.
Oh, yeah. So all the stuff that he's got her.
Yes, yes. Sometimes he wished so hard that he could just hear her speak. That would make life perfect. Sometimes he felt a little sad. In the evenings, he liked to go to the alehouse and talk and sing and carouse with his friends. He worked hard. Why should he not enjoy himself, too? One evening, however, when he arrived at the alehouse, he found it almost empty. None of his friends were to be seen, just the barman, and a stranger in a cape and a hood. The merchant was disappointed. Where were all his friends? What was he to do now? But he was a friendly fellow, and soon got talking to the man in the hood. He told him about his life, his work, his fine house, and his fine wife. Sounds like you have it.
I was going to say, is that the poor bloke who, with his hood, come to the pub for like, a quiet pint? Yes, I didn't need your life story.
It sounds as if you have everything, the hooded man said. I do, said the merchant, except... And he stopped. Tell me, the hooded man said. And the merchant told him. He told him how his wife was the fairest woman in England. Her hair was black as night, her skin was white like snow, her lips as red as the reddest rose, and she smelt of new mown hay. But she could not speak. He told him that he knew his wife's voice would be like the most beautiful bird song or the singing of angels, but that he was sad because he had never heard it. Don't trouble yourself, the hooded man said. That is easily managed. He reached into his cape and drew out a bone. It looked to the merchant to be a finger bone.
That's what you want to find from a stranger, isn't it? I shouldn't have got into the conversation with this one. I think I'm going home now.
Yes. He was very reluctant to take it, but the man pressed it on him. How hard do you have to press to give somebody a finger bone?
Quite hard. You'll be backing away, I think.
Take this bone. Tie a lock of your own hair to it, and an hour before midnight, put it under your wife's tongue.
Yeah, she's not going to notice that, is she?
Yeah, no.
A hairy bone under her tongue.
How do you convince her?
Wait until an hour. Asleep, is she? I don't.
Yes.
I don't know.
Wait until an hour after midnight, and then take it away again, and your wife will be able to speak.
Yeah, go, ta, got the hair in my mouth.
What the heck are you doing?
I got hair in my mouth.
The merchant couldn't wait to get home, and he couldn't wait for night to come. He lay in bed with his wife sleeping next to him until the time finally came. He carefully placed the bone and his hair under her tongue. He had to wait another 2 hours, but finally he plucked the bone out again. But his wife was still asleep.
Really?
Yeah.
She must be a heavy sleeper.
Yeah. As I mimic. It's a visual podcast, apparently.
Yes. I saw it.
But his wife was still asleep, and the merchant felt he couldn't possibly wait for morning to hear his wife's voice. That voice would be like the most beautiful bird song or the singing of angels. He gave his wife a kiss. She moved but didn't wake. He lay there for a while longer, but then he became impatient again. He gave her another kiss. This time she didn't even move. The merchant couldn't wait. He gave his wife a sharp nudge with his elbow.
That'll do it.
Yeah. She stirred, then opened her eyes, those beautiful eyes, and looked at him.
What the do you think you're doing waking me up in the middle of the night? You can't you leave me alone, you let me get some rest, can't you? And she rolled over and went back to sleep.
The merchant lay there in the dark, his eyes wide open. What had he done?
What have you done?
The next day, when they were breaking their fast, the wife said to him,
I suppose you go out at the f***ing merchant house again. I'll be stuck on my f***ing own while you go gallivanting around the city, getting up to f*** knows what with f*** knows who.
As he walked from the house, she was shouting after him.
And give me that bit of red brocade, you f***er. The last dress you bought me was ugly and cheap looking. I wouldn't be seen f***ing in it. Boasting to all your friends how much it f***ing cost when you couldn't see what a f***ing hideous thing it was.
When he got back from the alehouse,
he's regretting it now.
She was waiting for him.
Had fun with those b***ers you call friends? Coming really back here as a drunk as a b***ing lord?
The merchant couldn't take it any longer. Where was the voice that would be the most beautiful bird song or the singing of angels? Where was that silent, demure woman that he'd loved so much? He must find that hooded stranger and have everything put back to how it was. He went into every alehouse in the city, and there were a lot. Until he came to one that was so low, dirty, and mean-looking that he hardly dared go in. But then he saw the hooded man sitting in a corner. He rushed up to him. Please, you have to help me. And told him how he had been mistaken. His wife didn't have the voice like the most beautiful bird song or the singing of angels. She won't shut up, he complained. But the hooded man shook his head. I am not a man, he said. I am a demon from hell.
Ooh.
I can work marvelous spells. I can give speech to those who cannot speak. But there is one thing neither I nor even the devil himself can do, and that is to shut a woman up once she started talking.
Ooh.
We're going to get so many letters about this. This is a Tudor story. This is not ours. What's that disclaimer? They may have had opinions that do not reflect opinions of us.
Yeah. Yeah, mind you, we do a podcast. You can't shut us up either.
Yeah, no, you can't. Well, I suppose people can. They just turn us off.
That's true, yes. I suppose that was his problem. He couldn't just, there wasn't an off switch.
A little mute button. Oh, dear.
Oh, so it's a beware of what you wish for.
Yes, a speaking wife. Oh. April Fools.
We were looking for stories for Fools for April Fool's Day. We were spoilt for choice. There are an awful lot of fool stories.
And I think we'll keep going with these because they're fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the village of fools. It wasn't the villagers that were fools, was it? It was the king.
It was the idiot
herald
on the horse.
Yes.
You're an idiot. No, no.
Yeah, well, I think it's good to read these stories sometimes because Tudor life can seem unrelentingly grim, especially in our episodes. When we get to the end and think, oh, sorry, we brought everyone down again.
Yeah, well, we should probably do a day in the life, but a day in the life of somebody who doesn't have something horrible happen. Just a regular day in the life or a day during, I don't know, Michaelmas or Harvest Festival. Something, a good day. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, we can do it for Harvest Festival, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is a one-off now, but... Yeah, it's quite nice to imagine people getting together at a pub and bonding and laughing and
And some of the
joking.
Games they played, like the mug with the holes in it. They still make them.
What's
Have
that?
You seen those? They're game mugs, and you could often find them at inns when you had a whole group of people. You could rent the mug. You fill the mug with beer, but there's a myriad of holes, and it's a double layer. And you have to figure out which holes to plug with your fingers in order to drink it without it dumping out of one of the holes.
Oh.
Onto the drinker.
Yeah.
So most people would end up, like, soaked.
Soaked and thirsty.
Yes. And that was a game that used to be played at the inns.
I'm thinking I just paid for that pint.
Yeah. I think everybody goes in for the pint because that mug gets shared around as people try to figure out how to drink from it.
Ah. Well, now actually, we can see how the plague got around, can't we?
Yes.
Purely from these mugs.
Oh, well. Simpler times.
Yeah. You get a lot of stories about women getting the better of men and men getting the better of women at this time as well. The ones about women getting the better of men, I think, tend to be slightly more light-hearted, don't they? And the ones about men getting the better of women tend to be a bit
uncomfortable. Malicious, almost. Yeah. Or mistress kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah,
there are different types of stories for different classes, because the nobility liked chivalric stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the peasants like bawdy stories. Well, that's what they always say. I bet, given the choice, your average noble would far rather listen to, you know, this beautiful woman with a voice like a navvy.
than a chivalric.
Thinking, oh, I know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a good idea. Read something like this after a really horrible episode like Dudley Nimsen. Just inserted in between the two.
So much is expected of people then. They were required by the church to uphold so many virtues, because otherwise everlasting hell was heading
going to rain down on
way.
The town and the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yet you still had people going to prison.
Yeah, these stories probably acted like a safety valve.
Yeah.
Because you could do things in the stories that you didn't quite dare to do in life.
So, yes.
Yeah.
That and the Lord of Misrule. Not too many safety valves.
Yeah. I think that was especially probably the case for women, because they had so fewer. So, because they were the property of their husband and they were meant to be obedient to them.
And if they yacked at them too much, nagged or went after other people, they got the scold's bridle.
Scold's bridle or the ducking stool,
Yeah.
So what better way to get out your pent-up resentment
than these
than
stories?
To laugh at stories about men looking like idiots.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't. Apparently men couldn't do anything to their wives. You know, they might have been their possession, but there was seemed to be a big difference between chastising your wife and actually abusing her.
Good.
Because men were brought up in court for
yes, and you had the heavy
wives.
Music.
Yeah, rough music.
Rough music. That's
rough
the
music.
Word.
Yeah, rough I was music. Thinking about that. That's what maybe why you get so many stories about people being made to look foolish, because that was how punishments worked, wasn't it? You were in the stocks.
Yes.
Or you had the rough music, which was the man sitting on a plank being carried through the village while people hit saucepans and shouted at him. If he was a cuckold.
There were a couple incidents of rough music where the person actually died from being beaten.
Wow. There's a very lovely plaster bas-relief thing in Montacute House showing the Stillington Ride, I think they called it. And that's a man undergoing the rough music treatment.
Good.
Yeah. And the other thing was they'd get ram's horns nailed to their doors so everyone would know that you're a cuckold.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So it was all to do with humiliation and making people look like idiots. So
there are some cultures that still use that with their children when raising children. China does that. They don't beat, they don't yell. They embarrass their children and shame them.
Ooh. I don't think I like that.
When you have the choice of beating your child or shaming them, I think I'd rather go for shaming, personally. Well,
yeah,
actually,
not do either, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take that back. I'd rather do what I do, which is, let's sit down. I need to tell you why this is inappropriate. You know, gentle parenting, but at the same time, firm. Like, you don't...
Yeah. Or just let them walk all over you, like we do with our granddaughter.
She's going to get older and listen to these and be like, do they like me?
Yes, we do.
She's
Even
lovely.
Though she phones us in the morning and tells us what the wordle is before we've had a chance to do it.
Oh,
she's nice. Yes. Hello, Grandma. It's Snake. What? No, don't tell me. I was thinking, we don't do that anymore. We don't use punishment to make people look foolish. But then I thought, yes, we do. It's called the internet, isn't it?
It's called social media. And now it's cyberbullying.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's not official, but it's still there.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the stories. It's slightly more upbeat than our usual depressing, miserable episodes.
Yes, it is.
That we have to apologise for at the end. So
we still apologised for this one for the end of the line. Oops. But happy April Fools.
Happy April Fools.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.